Alexander, we have an update on Nord Stream 2. Mike Pompeo is making threats of sanctions. From what I understand, he hasn't actually implemented more sanctions, but he is making threats. Germany is moving forward. They seem unfazed by the threats. Russia is moving forward. They seem unfazed by the threats. What is the latest on Nord Stream 2?
Yes, this is a direct follow-on from the video we did just a short time ago on this. If you remember, Denmark allowed the Russians to use ships which, instead of use anchor positioning instead of power positioning, to lay the pipes that are under the sea for the final stretch. That seems to have provoked Mike Pompeo at the State Department to make these additional threats of sanctions. They're not actually new sanctions. What he has said is that Nord Stream 2 is no longer immune from sanctions as it once was. So the sanctions that the United States might implement or has implemented against Russia could be extended to include Nord Stream 2. The Germans are angry. They're saying quite clearly, we're going to press on. The German foreign minister has spoken out about this. There's been comments from the German government. They are supporting Nord Stream 2. The Russians are pressing ahead with the pipeline laying. It will be done. I am quite sure it will be done. I think that this is, again, a case of the United States noisily protesting against something that has already happened. It is not without consequences. It will create further strain between German and US relations. It will make for more things for Trump and Merkel to argue about. And I think part of what is driving this is the very real animus and hostility there is between the two. And of course, and perhaps this is the thing for the long term, it may make it more difficult for the Germans and the Russians to agree further pipeline deals in future, which may be part of what this is all about. But I mean, a lot of the pipe gas is now going to come through southern Europe anyway. Turk Stream is done. Mike Pompeo spoke about Turk Stream, or rather the future street of future spurs of Turk Stream, also being potentially exposed to sanctions. But that's very difficult to see how that is going to happen, because a lot of those spurs may be built without direct Russian involvement. So it's a play by Mike Pompeo and the US to stop a pipeline that's almost done and which will be done. And I don't think there's very much that has changed fundamentally.
Yeah, before we get to another story that I want to discuss, which are protests actually in Russia, protests in Khabarovsk, which is in the east of Russia, and protests which took place in Moscow and St. Petersburg. You'll get into those protests and if they're related or if they're not related. They're not related, that's a hint, but you'll get into those protests. One more quick question on common question on Nord Stream 2. Is it fair to say that the U.S. really boxed themselves in a corner with Nord Stream 2? In other words, to me, they lost any leverage and they took themselves completely out of the energy game in Europe, not via the Donald Trump White House, but via the Barack Obama White House when they went after Russia. When they decided to go after Russia and demonize Russia, decided to instigate the coup in Ukraine, decided to just basically burn the whole place down. That's when they took themselves out of the game in Europe as far as energy is concerned. Look at the geography. Russia is here. Europe is there. The U.S. could have been a player in all this. They could have been doing business in Europe along with Russia and Germany. But instead, Barack Obama took a different line, took a different path. And now you have Trump, who tried to create some sort of dialogue with Russia, rapprochement with Russia. He got taken out. And so you're stuck with the idiot Pompeo making stupid remarks once again. But at the end of the day, zero leverage because of the past geopolitical decisions via the Obama White House and then the deep state with the Russiagate stuff. Anyway, we know the story. They totally took themselves out of the freaking game.
Well, to an even greater extent than many people know, because, of course, what was happening, and I remember this so well, was that the Russians were looking to develop Arctic oil and Arctic gas. And they would say, who are the people who have the best knowledge about how to develop oil and gas facilities in the above the Arctic Circle? It is the US oil and oil majors. And they signed this, the biggest, I think, energy deal, energy development deal that Russia has ever signed was with Exxon. And the idea was that, Exxon was going to be developing Russia's oil and gas fields in north of the Arctic Circle, which, to be very clear, are the big ones. They are the big ones that are going to be coming on stream in a couple of years. And this was a huge deal. And then, of course, as you correctly say, the sectoral sanctions were imposed by Obama in 2014. And the United States, well, Exxon had to pull out. And this was, I think, a disaster for Exxon because you see, the Obama people assumed that without Exxon's expertise, the Russians wouldn't be able to develop the oil and gas fields north of the Arctic Circle. And it's certainly been more difficult for the Russians to do that. But they developed the technology and they did it because for them it is an important national interest and an overriding priority. And they've done it. And I know that for a fact, by the way, because I have an actual friend who is a Russian businessman, and he's actually involved and he's been there, and he tells me that he's been describing to me some of the things that have been happening in that part of the world. But their preferred partner was the US energy industry. They wanted to work with the US to develop Arctic oil and gas. And had that happened, of course, the US would have been a key part of the game. These pipelines, which would have been built with the US participation. No question about it. And of course, not only that, but quite possibly, the pipelines that were being built by the Russians to China, the Power of Siberia pipeline, and now there's another pipeline in the works, which the Russians are also going to be building, which is going to go through Tibet, apparently. They wouldn't have been built at all because, of course, the priority then would have been to keep the energy flowing to Russia's established customer, which was Western Europe. So the US would have been involved. The Europeans would have got the gas, the Russians would have got their exports, everybody would have benefited. But of course, it turned out otherwise.
Yeah, they blew it. Blew it big time. All right. Protests in Khabarovsk, a city in the east of in the far east of Russia, and smaller protests in Moscow and St. Petersburg. The protests in Khabarovsk were going on for quite a while. I think the protests in Moscow and St. Petersburg were pretty much spur of the moment events that were quickly taken care of.
These are two completely unrelated events. I know parts of the media have attempted to report them as part of one and the same thing, but they're completely different. The protests in Moscow and St. Petersburg are the routine protests that we get every couple of weeks or months in Russia, in which various people of the liberal opposition, as it's called, one should say the pro-Western, non-system opposition, which gets less than 1% of the vote in elections, but which routinely comes out and protests. They're the people behind those, a couple of hundred people in each case, nothing on any very significant scale. Most of their activity now is staging these small protests. And I have to say this, I'm being very cynical about this, but I've no doubt that this is correct. I think these people are put on these protests for show. Not to impress Russians, but to impress the various Western NGOs that provide them with their funding. I mean, they have to show that they're, achieving something. They're not winning elections anywhere. So how do they do that? By staging a protest on Tverskaya Street in Moscow or on Palace Square in St. Petersburg. And, the US media, the Western media is all there and they report it and it makes a nice story, but it doesn't really mean anything. The protests in Khabarovsk in the far east of Russia are a completely different story. Now, what happened was a couple of years, 2 years ago, there were local elections in Khabarovsk, and a person, the person who won, belonged to the opposition Liberal Democratic Party of Russia, led by Vladimir Zhirinovsky. By the way, this is a nationalist party. It is emphatically not a pro-Western party. But he defeated, they defeated the pro-Putin governmental party, United Russia, in the Far East. Far East has always been for Russia a region which is different from all of the others. Now, what has happened is that a couple of days ago, about a week ago, the governor who won that election, who is supported by the Liberal Democratic Party, this opposition figure, was arrested by the Russian authorities and charged with organizing murders 15 years ago. These were hitmen killings. And the implication is that he's a man who's deeply implicated in organized crime. Now, there is no doubt at all that organized crime has a very strong hold in the Russian Far East. I should explain that this is a region far away from Moscow on Russia's Pacific coast. There are two very big ports there at Vladivostok, which we've all heard of, but even bigger port is Nahodka, which is a major container port. This is a major route for smuggling products in and out of Russia. An awful lot of this goes on there. And these organized crime groups have undoubtedly been able to manipulate and gain control of local governments in various places. And they have also successfully staged demonstrations, protests in the past. I can remember one about 10 years ago when they staged similar sized protests after the Russian government sought to restrict imports of secondhand cars from Japan, which is very much part of, the same sort of rackets. So I suspect, I don't want to rush to conclusions, but I suspect that this is what this is all about again, that the Russian government is again trying to clean up the politics and the situation in the Far East, in places like Khabarovsk, Vladivostok, Nahodka. And again, you see the same sort of groups that were behind the voting for this particular individual have brought out their people. They've staged protests. I don't think it's going to make any difference. I expect this person will be put on trial, and I suspect we'll find out all sorts of very troubling things about him and about his past. So I think this is what this is all about. So I don't think we should look at these two sets of protests, the ones in Moscow and in St. Petersburg, and ones in the Far East in the same light. By the way, I think another point to say quickly is that the Far East is becoming much more important to the Kremlin now, because from their point of view, they're developing their relations with China and with South Korea, which, is sort of this area. So it's become a major economic and trade hub. And the other thing that's happening is a bit is that further west, they've been building up this big space center at a place called Vostochny. And again, I think they're planning to bring goods to service that center from the Far East and to attract customers from there. So I think from the Kremlin's point of view, they want to be securely in control of this region. And I think they now are prioritizing cleaning it up. So I think this is what this is all about.
Yeah, part of a cleanup. It's a fascinating area of Russia. It's about like a 9-hour flight from Moscow to
It is.
Vladivostok, but it is a different world over there.
It's a
Much
completely
different
different world.
world.
Very, very different world. I've never been there myself, but people who have tell me that the landscape is astonishing and the wildlife is remarkable. They've even got tigers there, by the way. That's where the Siberian tiger really is. And I've also heard that Vladivostok is actually rather a beautiful city. I mean, it's on the sea. There's some comparisons that you hear from people make that, it's a bit like San Francisco. Well, I don't take that too seriously. But I mean, it's certainly, apparently, it could be a really pleasant place if these sort of problems were sorted out.
Nice place to live.
Yeah.
Far, far away from the world's problems, I guess.
Far, very far away from the world. Well, they've got problems of their own, if
Yeah,
you
they
see
got
them
problems of
like
their own. Yeah, the
that.
protests in Moscow, I guess from your description, they were just people just earning a payday, earning a
Yeah.
paycheck from the Soros
Exactly. I mean,
NGOs.
exactly what they are. I mean, you see the people who were, the big names that they're not very big names really, but the big names. And it's always the same sort of people turn up at these things. I mean, I noticed that one person was Maria Aliokhina, who some of our viewers may remember was one of the Pussy Riot trio that staged that concert in the church all those years ago and was part of a rather famous trial. So, I mean, it's those kind of people. But, I mean, they're not part of the Russian mainstream and shouldn't be seen in those terms. The ones in the people who are protesting in Khabarovsk are an entirely different type of person, entirely different type of Russian. And as I said, there is a serious problem there, undoubtedly.
All right. I think it'll get solved
Yeah,
one way
I'm
or another.
sure. I think it will, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. You have a mug over
I
there real
certainly
quick.
do, very quickly. I've
10
got, look,
seconds. Show some of our new mugs.
mug of the United States, a mug of Australia,
Right.
smaller mugs from with Greece, as you
All
can
right.
see. We're now got also smaller mugs for people who want double espressos and things. So we've got all these amazing mugs, and I think, Alex, I'm right in saying that you've got a range of enameled mugs coming
Put
out
them
now, which have just come up, which I haven't yet seen, but which sound
Put them up
fabulous.
today. Put them up
I
today.
mean, I'm really excited about those.
You also have the Patriot Beacon. Just show the Patriot Beacon real quick.
Indeed, the
The Swiss
world, the
Army
world,
of Flashlights.
the Swiss Army knife of
Swiss Army
flashlights.
knife.
The best, certainly the best flashlight in the world. Of that, I say without any hesitation.
All right, 20% off the Patriot Beacon 3, that flashlight. When you go to their shop, Patriotic Legacy, you get 20% off. Just use the code Duran20 on checkout. Anything you buy there, you'll get a nice discount courtesy from our friends at Patriotic Legacy. They ship internationally as well. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Take care, everybody.